Progress.
Good morning. It is Tuesday, November 9th, 2021, and I'd like to call to order the Story County Board of Supervisors meeting. Please stand if you are able and join us in stating the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
You. There has been one change to today's agenda. The Bridge Home update will be moved to next week. And with that, is there a motion to adopt the amendment?
Those changes? I move to adopt the agenda with the change.
Second. Been moved and seconded. Murphy?
Aye.
Staples?
Aye.
Heddens?
Aye.
Now is the time for public comments. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. If you're in the meeting room here, please come forward and speak to the board. If you are on Zoom, please use your raise hand function and we can unmute you. I'll wait a few seconds because I know sometimes we rushed on through and then somebody got the raise hand function. I'm not seeing anyone come forward or raise hands, so we'll close public comment time. Next, we'll move on to, we have a proclamation to consider declaring the week of, November 13th, 2021 as National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. So we have the Story County, Iowa proclamation, National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week 2021. Whereas for the past 29 years, the National Coalition for the Homeless and the National Student Campaign Against Hunger and Homelessness have sponsored National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week. And whereas the purpose of the proclamation is to educate the public about the many reasons people are hungry and homeless, including the shortage of affordable housing in Story County for very low income residents, and to encourage support for homeless assistance service providers, as well as community service opportunities for students and school service organizations. And
whereas there are many organizations committed to sheltering and providing supportive services, as well as meals and food supplies to the homeless, which include but are not limited to the Assault Care Center extending shelter and support, the Bridge Home, Food First, Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance, Mid-Iowa Community Action, Story County Community Services, the Hunger Collaboration, the Salvation Army, Veterans Affairs, Youth and Shelter Services, as well as various church area churches and food pantries. Whereas the focus of National Hunger and Homeless Awareness Week 2021 continues to be volunteer, donate, educate. And whereas the Story County Board of Supervisors recognizes that hunger and homelessness continue to be a serious problem for many individuals and families in Story County. And
whereas the intent of National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week is consistent with the commitment and dedication of the members of the Two Rivers Committee and the Homelessness Prevention Team to educate the community and to provide the needed services and support to citizens who suffer from hunger and or homelessness circumstances. Therefore, we, the Story County Board of Supervisors of Story County, do hereby proclaim November 13 through 21, 2021, as National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week. On behalf of our community, we encourage all citizens to recognize that many people do not have housing and need support from citizens and public, private, nonprofit service entities. I would move approval of the proclamation.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Basil?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Heddens? Aye. Proclamation is approved, and I know there's a number of folks here from various agencies. I know I just want to say thank you for all the work that you do in addressing homelessness in our community or within our county. Supervisors have comments they'd like to make, or
it's time to session.
Oh yes, we'll have time to take a question. Oh, I'm sorry. Vanessa. Latimer Baker.
Good morning, everyone. I would just like to say thank you to the Board of, can you hear me?
Yes, we can, Vanessa.
Thank you to the Board of Supervisors for their continued support and partnership. And recognizing this important week and for your financial support of all the agencies for Ames and Story County that does this work.
Thank you for your comments, Vanessa. Anyone else? Carla?
Just want to say also thank you to the board and thank you to the City of Ames and Vanessa for all the work that goes into what we do each and every day. Thank you to all of the agencies that are here as well and those on Zoom. We do appreciate it. It's not work that just one entity can do alone. It does take everybody working together to be able to do what we do. So thank you. Appreciate it.
Did we want to do the picture now or at the end of the meeting? Do it now. Okay, some people don't have to do it. Okay.
I would like to also just personally say thank you for the work that you all do. Linda, before you sneak out, thank you for the work that you do. And just know that you guys, I know you know, but just to say out loud that you all touch so many lives and so many families every day. And that, you know, it can be one paycheck. And I'm preaching to the choir here, but it can be one paycheck. It can be one medical expense. It can be one flat tire, one speeding ticket, one loss in your family, and your whole world changes. And we need more people like you doing the work that you do. So thank you very much.
What she said. Exactly. I also thank you so much for the
Let's go on to agency reports. Veterans Affairs quarterly report. Good morning, Brett.
Hey, good morning, board.
Good morning.
Before I start, I want to announce that I've got a flyer and a needs list on the table right over here for the Iowa Veterans Home. The month of November, with the help of the Treasurer's Office, we are collecting donations. And on December the 3rd, I'm going to take those over to the Iowa Veterans Home. Just wanted to mention that. So for the Veterans Affairs quarterly report, this period is covered July 1 of 2021 to September 30th of 2021. Greetings from Story County Veterans Affairs and the Commission of Veterans Affairs. During the first quarter, we interviewed 128 veterans and or surviving spouses of veterans. And for county assistance, out of all of that, there was one family that came in for a funeral assistance, and that was $1,660. Some outreach programs during the quarter, we did Independence Day parade in Ames, Lincoln Highway Day parade in Nevada. Boy, it was really good turnout for those, as well as service organization meetings, American Legion, County American Legion, Story County, Vietnam Veterans of America chapter, and Veterans of Foreign Wars, all right here in the county. During the first quarter, we interviewed 128 surviving veterans and surviving spouses, and the breakdown of that was 103 men, 26 women, 12 during World War II, 12 that served during a Korea War, 29 that served during the Vietnam War, 24 served during Persian Gulf War, 22 during the Cold War, and 10 who served in Iraq or Afghanistan. Two National Guard, and there was 18 surviving spouses in that group. And I might add, this isn't part of the quarterly, but we're starting to see veterans coming home from Afghanistan. So we are picking up the pace. And over the weekend, I had the pleasure to go over to Boone and help out with the Yellow Ribbon event. And those are, we have events that are prior to active duty coming home, 30 days with the family. And then this one was our 90 day after being home with the family and the service members. So it's pretty interesting. They were deployed for 11 months. So they're very happy to be home. A lot of challenges for them though going forward, but it was a peacekeeping mission. So any questions from the board?
The interviews that you do, is that people just coming in with questions, or is that the result of outreach that you're doing, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. It could be like nursing home, going out to the nursing homes, jail visits, appointments in the office, walk-in in the office, and outreach events.
Do you have any concerns about how you may be able to reach the service people who are coming home from Afghanistan now?
Yeah, I mean, that's the Yellow Ribbons do help, because we're out there, we have a table, and of course, they're not all from, you know, they're not all from one county. They're from all over. They're not even all from Iowa. I talked to several that was from Missouri on Sunday. And, you know, it's a little bit of for them to reach out to ask for assistance, you know, a little bit of that. And it's a little bit of us to educate them on what assistance is out there. So
I would just be interested to know how, as we move through people coming home and readjusting to being home, you know, how that's going, and if there's extra support that you're seeing that people need, or how we can be aware of where some of those new challenges that maybe
right.
coming home from this experience might be different from some of the
you
previous
bet.
Homecomings.
And good point. Not everybody comes home and joins the American Legion. So
right.
I can't go to the Legion and, you know, say, oh, this is everybody, you know, here.
Right.
So one thing, and one problem we do have with the Iowa Department of Veterans Affairs is we get discharges, or they get discharges. They notify us on their addresses where they're living out.
Oh, okay.
And so we send out a welcome home letter.
Oh, great. Okay.
Kind of based off of the Vietnam era, that didn't get a welcome home letter, didn't get a welcome home. So we have a welcome home letter. And so hopefully to reach out to those folks. Yeah. You bet. And then as well as working with Iowa State on
right.
student veterans that are. That said, I'm just checking in for my benefits for the first time, and they're in a nursing home, you know, so they're proud. They don't want to ask for help a lot of times. And so,
yeah, I was thinking more along the lines of mental health supports, and then maybe, you know, still having a hard time finding employment or holding on to employment because they're still dealing with just the transition itself. That was really kind of where.
One really, really good benefit to them is they have 5 years of medical and mental health coverage. And so if we can get them into that system right away, then, you know, we can get help for them in other ways too. But that's one thing that they do get when they, after being deployed, it's into that system there. So, yep.
Thanks.
Well, Anything else?
No, I just would say, yeah. I know it would be on your next report, but it looked like you had a good turnout for your benefit supermarket last week when I was there. It looked like you definitely a larger room to help with the flow of people.
Yeah, you know, we had a larger room, so it looked like the crowd wasn't as good as it was before, but yeah, pretty good turnout. And, you know, something we put in place for folks that missed it for some reason, we have bags in our office that are set up. They can come into our office and we give them a bag of goodies. And then also after Veterans Day, on Veterans Day afternoon, the American Legion in Ames, they have all the, if you've seen that back in the corner, the boots and the hats and all that, they didn't take any of that stuff back with them. They said I could keep it all. So anyway, we took it all to, we don't have room for all that. We took it to the American Legion in Ames. So the afternoon from 12:30 to 4:00, anybody that wants any of that kind of stuff, they can come up on Thursday. Yep. And then to mention, Ames has a Veterans Day program. It's 11 o'clock at the auditorium in Ames. And then from 12 to 1 is a lunch at the American Legion. Colo has a program at 10 a.m. at the high school gym. They're going to give out 5 quilts of valor. And we've got one Korean veteran's going to get one. 3 Vietnam, which one of those is Pat Pekin, and 1 Gulf War. And then here in town at the high school at the auditorium, they have a program at 10 o'clock. And our commission chair is going to be the speaker there, Monty Woodward. After that, they invite people to the Legion for coffee and refreshments.
Thank you.
Yeah, hope everybody has a great Veterans Day. Come on up there on Thursday.
Thanks, Brett.
Yep.
Thanks,
Brett.
Next, we have a presentation or an update, quarterly report update, the AEDC Outreach and Workforce Quarterly Report. Right to Dan and Brenda.
Good morning, supervisors. Thanks, Bryce, for getting our presentation pulled up.
My first?
You're first.
Well, all right. Good morning. Thanks for having us this morning. I'm here to just say, express our gratitude for the ongoing partnership. I mean, if you really sit back and look at the amount of interactions that our organization has with each of you and in Story County and the Board of Supervisors as an organization, it's really impressive. If you look around the state, and you see the difference in the way economic development organizations interact with their local Board of Supervisors. So we're grateful for that partnership. We always appreciate your feedback on how we're doing, how we're staffing ourselves, et cetera, et cetera. We've been through a lot of change like everybody has in the last 18 months. We've had a lot of people come and go through our organization in that time. We've had a pretty good record of hiring people that stuck for a while and then moved on to bigger opportunities. Most recently, John Hall, who left our organization to become the CEO of the Marshalltown Chamber of Commerce. And so we're always looking for people like that, that we can ingrain and embed in our organization for a while. And as I tell most of my folks, especially my young folks, when I hire them, this probably isn't your last job. So let's make this a great opportunity so you can move on to the next opportunity. And maybe you'll look back at us and say, that was a pretty good place to be. So with that, I'm gonna turn over to Brenda and say, again, thank you for your ongoing partnership and relationship. We do appreciate it.
So I'm going to do actual dual duty today and talk both about giving you an update as it relates to our workforce programming. I'll let Nikki come back and visit with you about where we're at with retraining. So I'll talk about kind of our more traditional workforce programming that you've been supporting for a number of years. And then I'll give you a little update as well on some of the outreach activities. And we had a good opportunity to hear from all of our communities when we met as an economic development group earlier, later in October. So, but I'll give you a few updates on things. So Bryce, if you'll advance, I'll give you a little glimpse on where we're at with unemployment. So September is the most recent numbers we have available. We're at 2.1%. And I would actually compare that to really a year ago. So last September, we were at 2.8. And, you know, in August, we were at 3.1. So regardless of what the numbers are, I think we're trending back where we're getting some folks employed again, and not maybe right where we were before the pandemic, but certainly heading in the right direction. We're excited to be back working career fairs again, getting ourselves out in front of audiences of people to talk about the wide array of job opportunities we have available. So we've participated in Iowa State. I guess we're missing an N on Northern Iowa. So at UNI, actually we have a person up covering two events in Sioux City today. So the community colleges slowly but surely are getting back to in-person events. And so they've got a manufacturing cohort one day and a medical cohort the other day. So we felt really strongly we needed to get in front of those students. And before the year's up, we'll actually be doing a virtual career fair in the STEM areas. So that hits our engineering needs as well as some of our IT needs as well. Once we get those leads, we actually market to those folks that, you know, in terms of continuing to get the job board in front of them. So, you know, we try to keep our message pretty simple. We have, you know, 2000 job opportunities posted on rookienames.com. Go there to find out more. You know, there's been a lot of discussion around Newton and the workforce that's going to be displaced there at the end of the year. So we launched a digital marketing effort there last week. We've had good enough open rates on those efforts that we've decided to do an in-person event next Thursday and Friday. And so shared with our leadership team this morning a pretty robust list of about 8 employers that are going to be attending that event with us. So, you know, some of our larger manufacturing employers from across the county will be joining me at that event. So we'll do a Thursday night event, and then we'll get up early Friday morning, do an early morning Friday event through the lunch hour. So we'll be advertising that in the Jasper County area. And one of the things that I'll be doing there is really getting a sense from the attendees what their potential transportation needs would be. I actually think CURTA covers Jasper County, so it might be an interesting opportunity once we kind of get a handle on, do we have folks interested, and you know, what is their desire? Is it to long-term relocate, or is it to figure out a transportation solution? So we'll give you an update the next time we're in front of you in a few months, and if you have extra questions on that at the end, I'd be glad to answer those. So let's look at the next slide, Bryce. Also wanted to give you kind of some statistics, and you know, Brett's still here, but we've received about 150 leads through the Homebase Iowa program this year. We've touched those leads 3 times with a handwritten note, an email that details the quality of life, jobs, and relocation incentives available. And then we actually mail out a packet of information. So, you know, that's where we're at with Homebase Iowa. And then I've given you the last 3 months of statistics on the job board and in our digital media. So you can see our followers, our reach on Facebook, and in terms of the website views that we've had over the last 3 months looking at our jobs. So now I'll move to outreach. A couple things that I thought you might be interested in on the outreach side of things. I'm very excited for Colo. They've worked very, very hard to try to figure out a housing solution that would make sense really from a math equation standpoint. And so Colo, if you don't know, is one of our communities that actually has an independent development board. And so the city of Colo has joined a partnership with the Colo Development, which actually owns Nylands, and they actually have some revenue streams. So they've identified on land that the development corporation owned, or the city owns, the ability to put 14 lots up in their community. There's really minimal infrastructure investment to serve those 14 lots, and they're targeting a lot price of $15,000 to $20,000. And so starting from that, you know, it helps affordability a long ways. And what we were finding is it costs the same amount to develop a lot in Nevada as it does in some of our smaller communities, and the market's a little different. So I applaud the council and the development board in Colo getting as far as they have. So if you see Amy or any of our council, make sure you talk to them about that. We're again excited to see how quickly maybe that can happen. On the Roland side of things, I'm going to be up at Roland Monday night, but you know, they've had some discussions, unique discussions around Dollar General. And those discussions have actually led to folks being more interested in economic development. And so we have some new folks joining Roland Area Development. And so they've asked me to come up on Monday night and do kind of an overview of economic development and give them a lay of the land on what we can do on your behalf in their community. I'll keep you posted there. So again, it seems like there's about a handful of people that'll be joining that group. And again, I just would point out that they're continuing to have challenges with their city hall. We've tried to connect them with maybe some folks that we think could be helpful in supporting that, and whether or not it'll be a good match, but it is a challenge, and I would share that on their behalf. Is there one more slide, Bryce? Some exciting news from up north. I think we've got a really strong prospect on the Zeering Bank, and it's a technology company. So we think about what we had envisioned for that space. That picture is old, but I still like it. But they're evaluating the financial assistance available at the state level. I joked with Dan, I said, I wonder if we did a state application in Zeering, if it would be one of the smallest places from a business assistance that that the state had ever done. So I'll stay posted. That all comes down to jobs and benefits. You know, you need higher quality jobs, you need benefits, and you just have to evaluate sometimes if that's the right match. So we'll keep you posted. The goal would be is once they get the dollars out of that building, that they'll roll to the building probably right across the street from City Hall. And on there, you know this, it wouldn't be possible without all the programming that the county has to support our smallest communities. So that's what's enabled them and put them into a position where we can talk about a pretty neat deal potentially going on at the bank. You know, one of the things we're promoting now when we're talking with our communities and our businesses is we've had a regional loan fund relationship called the Mid-Iowa Development Fund. Quite frankly, the funding in the past has just been rates and terms were just not, I mean, our local banks was really a much better way to go that direction. But this one is new. They took some CARES money. They're able to do 2 years at 0% and years 3 through 10 at 2%. This is more interesting to our banks to be able to utilize those funds to be able to support ratios in projects. So I think we've got about 3 applications that are either in or about ready to go in to that fund. And so, you know, it's a good tool, and it really is a tool that the banks are really interested in terms of being able to be supportive in terms of other money into projects to make things work. So that's our outreach and our workforce report. I take any questions. Dan's here as well to feel things that are on your mind.
Question.
No. We've been watching this unfold over here, Supervisor Merkin.
So I think I can close by simply saying I haven't had an opportunity to address the full board since we came to an agreement on the dollars for the retraining program. And you know, we all go into these things with really good intentions, and we're really excited about it. And so far, the feedback we've gotten really ultimately on your behalf of having the vision to invest in this opportunity and try something pretty unique and remove the impediments for people that may certainly need upskilling, whether it's childcare, whether it's transportation, whatever it might be. We've heard really positive feedback. And so we're bullishly optimistic this is going to work as we hope, and we're pushing really hard, and Nikki's off to a great start. I did not know her before she joined our organization, and she's doing a nice job of getting out and promoting the program. So if you hear feedback Otherwise, let us know and we'll certainly mobilize as much as we can, because we think that's a really unique opportunity that will serve up a population that doesn't always have services at their disposal like this. So thank you for that.
You've certainly done a good job getting information out. I was at the Veterans Supermarket the other day and so I stopped the Iowa Works table. And I just said, what's new? They start telling me about this workforce retraining program.
Good.
It was really, they were excited about it.
Yeah.
So I think you're making the right connections.
And as we said all along, it's not only good for the folks that are receiving the opportunity. It's great for our communities, but Dan and I would also tell you that it has resonated with our existing employers as well as prospective employers that are looking at our area. We're showing that we are proactively trying to tackle this workforce thing in partnership with a lot of folks. So that would be the piece I'd add to that.
Yeah, and I've heard from some of my colleagues in other counties that have heard about this particular program.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I got to look into this a little bit. What is Ames is doing? Ames Historic County is doing a great thing.
Well, just tell them you guys were first.
Yeah, that's what we tell them.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We have 9 minutes to consider today. We'll move on to consideration of claims.
I would move approval of claims as listed.
Second. It's been moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Teddins? Aye. Anyone pulling anything from today's consent agenda?
No.
I would move approval of consent agenda.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Basil?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Teddins? Aye. Consent agenda is approved. We have no public hearing items for today. So we're down to additional items. So Supervisor Murphy, you put discussion and consideration of the selection of the county inspector for the pipeline on the agenda.
Yes. And I just put it on there for discussion because we had received correspondence and email from the Iowa chapter of the Sierra Club. And I'll just read it. Dear County Supervisors, I am writing to you today in regards to Summit Carbon Solutions' request for counties to hire ISG as the county inspector for the Midwest Carbon Express pipeline. Attached is a document that lays out the reasons why counties should hire an independent contractor, not ISG. If your county has already signed a letter of intent with ISG, it's not a contract, you can withdraw your intent. And both this email and the information, and the information that Ms. Mazur sent are on the agenda. And basically what I believe the Sierra Club is saying is they believe that ISG is not, has in the past, and this is what they've said, didn't feel like they were independent, that they were closely tied with some carbon solutions, and that ISG had been had hired an inspector during the Dakota Access Pipeline construction, and that there were concerns with landowners. Yeah. So I just wanted to put this on our agenda for discussion. And I don't know that we can do anything right now, but if we want to do any further looking at something, I can volunteer to do some phone calling.
Yeah, I know I've received the same letter from the Sierra Club as well. I don't know that I've heard from any landowners as of yet, but it may not be far enough in the process.
Well, no, I think what they were saying with the Dakota Access Pipeline that the landowners were concerned about was that the topsoil was up the back properly, there was compaction of the agricultural land of the fields, and that ISG, they didn't feel, did a very good job making sure that the pipeline company did that. So we wouldn't know that now. Right? All we can look at are two issues, whether we feel they did a good job during the Dakota Access Pipeline construction, and whether we think they're independent, sufficiently independent from Summit Carbon.
I got the same email, and I know they're holding a webinar in the next, I think it's tomorrow evening. What my response to Ms. Mazur was what I hoped to learn from this webinar tomorrow is how would the supervisors go about identifying alternative companies? And that one of the arguments that ISG made on their behalf was that they have many lessons learned from the previous pipeline.
And I wasn't at the meeting when they were here, I wasn't able to be at the meeting.
Right.
So what did they basically say they left? Do you remember?
I don't remember the specific lessons, but we learned a lot from that experience. There are things we would do differently. Nothing specific that I remember, but I think there's some validity to that. I don't think it helps clarify or clear up any concerns, I think it's just very complicated. I think it would be worth our time to see what other options exist.
So you said there's a meeting tomorrow?
Yeah.
Sierra Club?
Yeah.
Are you able to attend the ones? I have another meeting tomorrow night. I have a 911 service board tomorrow night.
Right. So the Sierra Club meeting is from 7 to 8, and I have a meeting from 6:30 to 7:30. So
tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Let me look at my tomorrow
group. Yeah, that's when my meeting is as well.
I told her I would pop on as soon as I was finished with the other meeting, but I know.
Is it the title that Protect Our Land?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know if I've registered for it. I have it on my agenda. I could probably do it. I have a meeting at 5, but I don't have anything from 5 to 6.
And I did ask, and they are going to record it. They will send it out to anyone who has registered. So,
okay.
So that there's that too.
Yeah.
And Supervisor, because you attended the IEB workshop webinar, correct?
I did.
And I had another conflict then, so wasn't able to do that. And did you have any thoughts from that session?
No, they basically just kind of went over the process of how things were to be. I do have some notes, and I apologize. I was thinking I sent them to you both, and you're right. I think I did. Things that they said to consider, kind of the timelines. I do know that IUB, our utility boards really emphasize that if we have questions, they want you to reach out to them, and they will try to answer our questions as quickly as possible for us as well.
I have to admit the whole process is confusing for me. I just, it doesn't seem to be enough separation regardless of which company we were to hire to be the inspector. It just doesn't seem like there's the ability for enough independence.
Right. Well, then we have the other pipeline that's coming in as well, right? And just knowing understanding their path and, you know, how that's going to go on the impact. And some of it that's just, we have limited control.
Right.
But we don't have that large say that I think we all like to have.
Right.
Right. So it kind of sounds like something that we're interested in looking in, like what might be some other outlet, what might be the benefit or not. As we said, ISG had stated that they, as you had said, some lessons learned, that they would do a little differently. I have to go back and re-listen to that meeting time. We could also talk with our engineer as well.
It'd be nice to know what the other counties call hired IMG. they're doing a process, an RFP or something like that. I also have a call into the Office of Consumer Advocate. I wasn't able to get it done until this morning, but I would like to talk to her again about this. So if they have any thoughts or recommendations.
Well, maybe we just do some more gathering of information and then bring this back. You know, have this item on in a future agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, after we find out a little bit more information.
Yeah, I appreciate you putting it on the agenda, though. I think that it's important to talk about it.
Yeah. I'll try to get a little bit more information for the next meeting.
And I would assume that, I don't know when contracts would come out, that might be something that we brought to Darren on, who may know that if we are looking to make any potential changes that we give, definitely enough lead in time. I know part of it is they're looking at building up their staffing capacity in anticipation of what the needs may be for Story County or the other areas that they are being inspected on as well.
We haven't been presented with a contract, have we?
No,
we just did a letter of intent.
I don't believe so.
Okay.
No. Yeah, I don't recall seeing the contract. No. No. Yeah.
I haven't seen anything on the agenda since that meeting I missed.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Okay. This discussion and consideration that this is more than just a discussion and information gathering of what we're going to do.
Yeah.
Anything else? Time on that topic? No. Okay.
Good. Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Okay. Next, we'll move on to discussion and consideration of Resolution 22-37, the application for the FEMA grant. Good morning, Jody.
Good morning, board. What we have today is, as you're all pretty aware, I've been trying for a FEMA grant to get a larger generator for this facility. Previous applications ended up all being denied. Our project wasn't picked, but found another FEMA grant potential source. So submitted an application for that. We did some price updating. This cost have went up since we started this process almost 2 years ago when we first started the application. And so part of that process is a resolution saying that if the project was awarded, that we would have the out-of-pocket cost of $92,282.85. Which even with the project costs going up, the out-of-pocket is less than our original applications because they're anticipating the state match would be the full, 10%, where before they were anticipating it to be more around 5% state match. So that's why the higher project cost, but the lower cost out of pocket for us on our end. It is a project that is currently in my operating budget. We've just been waiting for an award. The last one was close. FEMA's looking at it and they're asking questions, and that's always a good sign. So, questions, explain it a little better.
Do you have any idea why the other ones weren't
granted? The other ones had come down to when they calculated the benefits cost analysis. They wanted to see times where the EOC was activated and the building was without power, which they wanted to, they used the term the majority of those activations, the buildings without power, we had zero events. That...
So we were lucky.
So yes, we were lucky. Yeah, it's one of those kind of an oxymoron, I guess. But it's supposed to be preventative measures, but exactly. This grant is one that basically there's projects that have been awarded, but the agency wasn't able to come up with the funds to proceed with the project. So then we were kind of on a back burner type list. So that's good for us. Mm-hmm. So.
So do you know that kind of there are timelines if you submit this, what you're looking
at? We're hoping we would have an answer sometime February, March-ish, because their meeting, FEMA's board is meeting to discuss these projects as I speak. So hoping for something shortly after the first of the year, we would know one way or another. And then this is kind of the last available disaster declaration with money behind it that we could put this project towards. So
I was just wondering, so as I'm learning more about climate action and greener buildings, mm-hmm. and greener energy, is the backup generator that you're looking at, is that something that is it green? Is it run on gasoline?
Or runs on diesel fuel.
Diesel.
So I wouldn't put it underneath the green category. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Has that decision already been made? Like, this is what we would be getting, or?
Yeah, because to go with a green energy source, you're about your only real option is solar. And unfortunately, the solar array that we would need to power this facility 100%, we physically don't have the space for.
Okay. Just thinking if we're going to take, I'm just talking on my own here. If we're going to move the county more towards renewable energy and less carbon, if we're going to invest in something now, how does that fit into where we may be moving towards? And just kind of, so maybe you and I should have some conversations,
sure.
about what that is like, and maybe the conversations I should be having with more people around the county, specifically you guys.
Sure, I welcome it. Yeah, just
we've been looking at that solar crate technology, mm-hmm. and yeah, there's no way something like that you could power a building like this. You know, we're going to, you know, I think we're years down the road. I would love to see it if we could have,
I mean, the solar crate, Linda and I have been attending some of those seminars, and Keith Morgan put on a little demonstration. The technology's great because it hinges a lot on batteries technology, which that's a whole other conversation that you and I can get into. It's the technology is just not quite there to do a facility of this size.
We have been doing a lot of other things to help.
Yes.
Green, because I remember sitting
in
with you as well.
Green, we are, all of our large locations are full geothermal, which mm-hmm. is a very green way to heat and cool your facilities. We've been upgrading all of our lighting to LED.
Right. Yeah. I do know things are happening. I'm just trying to.
Yeah. Wrap your mind around putting
in. Yeah. Invest in something.
Yeah. A big diesel burn generator outside.
Right. Yeah.
I totally understand.
Yeah. I think the fact is, and yeah, the technology just isn't there now to do it. But the reality is that it's a temporary fix. It's a temporary thing. We wouldn't be on diesel that long. Electricity got restored.
Yeah, I mean, putting in a backup generator doesn't say that, well, we did this, so we can't do these other ways, because the generator is a backup power supply.
Right.
So hopefully,
right,
it never runs is the key, you know, but it's there when we need it. So.
Right.
I move adoption of resolution 22-37, the application for FEMA grant for the admin building generator upgrade, and authorize Jovi to submit the application and associated documents.
Second. Been moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Evans?
Aye.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Jovi.
Thank you, Jovi, for being here.
Yeah. Goes through it.
It's a win. Yeah.
Yes.
Next, we have departmental reports, environmental health. Good morning, Jacob.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Well, I submitted the report to you guys as far as what's been going on in the department this last quarter. And just to kind of, I guess, briefly go over things, I don't know if you guys have that for the screen or? Okay. So far, like in our on-site program, we've had 73 new applications this year and 39 alteration permits. And we've had 88 time of transfer inspections that have been done. We actually got called up to a subdivision north of Ames for some systems that they were having some issues with. And we found out that they weren't working. And we've been working with the builder up there to come to a resolution on either repairing or replacing those systems. And hopefully this afternoon, I'll be back up there again and we'll actually know what the final determination is going to be. And then hopefully within the next couple of weeks, have it all repaired and taken care of. So,
those Vantage systems?
Actually, these ones were the cocoa filters. So there was two of them up there that we think, we're not exactly sure what happened, but sometime after they were installed, like in the grading process and landscaping, we think there was some damage done. And so they were actually leaking some sewage into the ground and not working like they were supposed to. So we've gotten the actual sewage, we got that pipe fixed right away, but now we're trying to make sure that the actual systems are going to function like they need to.
That's a few years.
Yeah. So yeah, they're less than, both units were less than 2 years old. So it was, so we're just trying to figure out what can be done. And the manufacturer has been sending their technicians up and trying to figure out if there's a repair that can be done to them. So it's been kind of it's taken a while between the weather and the timing of everybody's schedule, but hopefully we'll know what's going to be going on with those today. So, and then just so you guys know, on the pumping ordinance that took place in January, so far, my report actually says 440. That was actually at the end of the quarter. I just checked this morning and we've had over 515 reported that have just gone in for regular pumpings in order to comply voluntarily with the ordinance. We're kind of estimating we have, I know Linda and I were talking, we have 3,246 active permits in the county.
What's that number again?
3,246. So that's how many active systems that we know about that are permitted in our county. And we kind of estimate between the numbers that we have pumped and the time of transfers that have been done in the last 5 years and the new permits and inspections that have been put in, that we're somewhere between 40 and 50% voluntary compliance on that program. So I think that's a really good start for how that ordinance was written and where we're going. And we'll kind of keep evaluating that program on how we can keep improving it and getting word out. Definitely people are hearing about it. And we do know that there are other systems that are being pumped, but we only have like three pumpers in our county that report into us on a regular basis using our system. So they can use anybody in the state of Iowa that's licensed, but they may not necessarily report it. So trying to figure out how we're going to capture some of that information is kind of one of the things we're trying to figure out. It's going to be an evolving process. But
the owner can simply give you a copy of your invoice.
Yep, the owners can give us a copy. A lot of times if they call to verify, we can let them know. And if not, they can send us what we need and we put it in. And so we'll figure out how we're going to get to capture some of that information. So far, I think it's off to a really good start. I think I've gotten pretty positive feedback from it from people I've talked to, and get a lot of questions on, you know, things that they might have. Trying to figure out what, how we can help them on those things. But so far, I think it's been pretty good feedback.
I've had some people actually tell you that when they're having pumps, it's not problems.
Yes, I just had a call this morning from somebody who had it pumped and found out the back end of the tank wasn't working. So he's planning on doing a replacement of his tank in the near future. And so we haven't required anybody to do replacements based on this. This has just been voluntary. They've learned there's a problem, and then they come to us and ask us what to do and how to fix it, or the pumpers themselves are telling them and educating them on that thing. So we've had a pretty good response from it so far.
Have you been able to share with people that the Story County Housing Trust has funding available for repairs?
We talked to the Board of Health about it, and I think Liam is going to get us some information so that we can put a link on our website that I don't know has been done yet. But yeah, definitely it's kind of letting people know when they do call that we can that they have those options. And there's also that, and then there's also the OSWAP loans too that people can use, which is another assistance program out there to help people offset. It's like a low interest loan that people can use in the state of Iowa. So we try to let people know that they have some options. So I think that's pretty positive feedback that we've had with that program. So as far as the well program goes, I mean, we've permitted 10 new wells this year, 6 geothermal wells. Taylor's been going out and doing a lot of water samples. We've done 45 of those so far this year. And we've had 13 wells and one cistern that have been plugged and during the last grant period, I believe. And then the counties, so just so you know, on our grants to counties program, the award amount for every county went up this year. It's usually $30,300, and we went up to $40,400 that's available to us to help us with to help our residents offset some of the costs. So that pays for water sampling of private wells. It does some resets for plugging wells if we find them, some well rehab, things like that. There's money available, and now we have it for shock chlorination. If they find bacteria in their well, then we can offset some of those costs if they have somebody go out and do that for them. And so that's, and then flood assessments too. They get flooded at all, and we need to do an assessment to see how it's doing. There's money to offset that. So last year, on our last grant, we claimed just under $20,000. And so we're trying to do some, trying to figure out what we can do to promote that program a little bit more in our county, as far as, letting people know that they can do those water samples, that there's no cost, and providing some education. A lot of it's an educational program. We go out there and, we'll look at their well and we'll tell them things. We provide the education on what we're seeing. And, there isn't necessarily an enforcement angle to the codes for wells, but we can definitely let them know, what they can, so that they can make more informed decisions to protect their water quality. So our tattoo program, we haven't started anything yet. Those inspections are typically done in the winter months. So I'm sure next time I report, I'll probably have some activity for those. Our aquatic program, our inspections are all done. They finished those the beginning of the summer is when all the outdoor ones got done. And we are actually working on our new aquatic ordinance. So we've been working with legal. We have some revisions to make. And then we're going to be doing a stakeholder meeting, hopefully mid-November, if we can get the ordinance wrapped up here soon. But that should be good. Looking forward to that. That'll give us a lot more ability to get out there when we do our inspections. It's pretty much taking it right from the state code, so not much changes. But It gives us a little bit more ability to require postings and public information and things like that so that people know what they're getting. Our tanning program, those inspections just started. Taylor's been trained and now she's out doing independent ones. We've done 6 out of the 19 facilities so far and everything's going pretty well. We did find one unregistered facility. We identified an inspectant. We referred it to the Iowa Department of Public Health so that they would be able to register it and stuff like that. There were some minor issues and things like that that they didn't realize needed to be done, but now they're on track of trying to get those things in compliance, so that'll be good. And we've potentially have a few other unregistered sites. We've been trying to go through the list that the state provides us and kind of what we know in our county through, you know, social media or just things we hear. And we're trying to verify those lists and I'm making sure that anybody who is doing it is actually, you know, getting inspected and licensed like they should be. And so far I know we had the new ordinance that went in for that limited the age restrictions. I did ask about that. So far the only facilities that Taylor had inspected have been ones that were basically adult based only. So, you know, we haven't gotten any of the facilities to know how that's working with the age and stuff to see if we have any problems, but she knows to look for that when we review the paperwork. So as far as complaints and notices of violation, we haven't had any notice violations and we've just had just a few miscellaneous types of nuisance that have happened. We had the stove fire, we had some trash. Most of it's all related to living conditions and rental properties. And a lot of those end up being in incorporated areas where we don't really have jurisdiction and we can just provide more support, you know, kind of where to go legally, you know, help them kind of know what can be done and what can't be done. And we do several times we will go and just do an inspection and provide a letter that says, you know, hey, here's what we observed, so that they can take that to either their landlord or their legal counsel and things like that to try to get some stuff resolved.
Stover fire.
Oh, I knew you were going to ask that. Sorry. No, I'm like, it was near Roland.
Near Roland. Okay.
Yes. And it was like one of the first few weeks that I was here. So I'm like, going, I'm trying to remember.
That big site there that's close to the car up there. Is there, was it a big site?
It was a pretty big site. Most of it was, I mean, by the time I saw it, a lot of it was gone, but it was a pretty decent sized site.
Verbi was trying to get rid of most of their stove, and then I saw there's still some up there.
Yeah, I know there's a couple other sites that I saw.
One that had the fire, did it just all go or most of it?
Most of it, yeah.
Then it's not the one I'm thinking
of. Yeah, no, I think that one was a couple miles, I think, south of there from what the one you're talking about.
So do we know what the status is of those final sift over sites, what they're doing?
No, I bet. No, we've heard that. I've heard some different stories as well. And we don't know what they're doing.
I'm not sure. Because they can be. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they've been there a long time.
Yeah. And I think we've all heard kind of some different things. So I'm not sure what the ending status is, like what they've decided. So
we have an opportunity to.
So as far as joint department reviews, we've done 4 survey reviews and we've in the last quarter, and then we did 80 reviews that were completed through Citizen Circle Planning and Development. And that included some of them that we've with the septic systems that got referred to like DNR because they're large systems. So, you know, there was a large church and like the YSS facility, those will all become DNR permitted. So that was part of our review, is to let them know where they had to go. As far as the miscellaneous stuff, we did have one demolition permit that was issued, again, the first week I was here. I'm not sure exactly where it was, but I do know we talked to them about that. We kind of changed our processes a little bit on the demolition to provide some more information and coordinate better with DNR so that they're aware of it as well. So we'll send those permits up to them so that they can keep track of it as well. Staff has attended various interdepartmental meetings and webinars. We went to our Iowa Environmental Health Conference that they do every year and got some CUs that way. Taylor did pass her CPO exam for pools, so she's now able to do independent pool inspections, which is a big help to all of us. And I have joined the on-site wastewater training center advisory committee through DMAC, and that's looking at helping look at the training that's offered in the on-site program, not just to installers, but also to county health departments, new professionals in the environmental health world. What do we need? What's going to help people the most? And how do we revamp and look at some of those trainings as well as their training site and what they have to offer? So we just had our first meeting and that went really well. So, and then we're I've also been involved with the DNR's pilot team for their time of transfer program that they're coming out with a new database. And so those inspections that the inspectors are out doing, instead of doing paper copies and sending them into us, that'll all be a web-based application. It's going to standardize what they give to us as far as reporting, how it's being done. And so I think, I know they're rolling it out next year, and I think the goal is to roll it out in the spring. So we've been on that pilot team just trying to, you know, kind of go through what they have and give our feedback, like, hey, we need this. And the first phase that they roll out is mostly going to be to the people doing the actual inspections. And then the next phase is going to be the county involvement. We've kind of been pushing saying we need some of that a little bit sooner than later, because the county is supposed to review those inspection reports, and the way that they're going to be submitted there, it could be a little, it could be confusing for people saying, well, we've submitted it, but we didn't know the county didn't review it. So we're trying to work on some of those things. So. And then as far as upcoming stuff, we're just, like I said, we're developing some promotional ideas for the Grants County. We're looking at holding some stakeholder meetings for the industry, especially in the onsite, to let them know different things that might be changing and try to do some, like an annual education between the installers in Story County and what we do. So that way next spring when that season starts up, we're all on the same page and doing stuff. And then, of course, there'll be some budget discussion coming up pretty soon. So those are the kind of things we're working on. So any questions or anything on anything?
Very thorough.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
All right, thank you.
Moving on, as I said, the bridge home is being moved to a later date. Upcoming agenda items. I think the only thing that we will, that I can say for upcoming agenda items, or at least for me, would be the 2080 agreement from CICS. Whether it'll be next week or the week after, because I'm working are allowed to have Russell the 2080 agreement with CICS.
Can I just jump in? I did reach out to Russell to see if November 23rd works for him.
Okay. So that's what we'll have it on the agenda. It'll be November 23rd.
Yep, that's what I'm working on right now.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure his schedule is quite busy. So whatever. Great. Next, we'll move on to public forum number two. Comments from the public on items not on this agenda, that the board may not take action on the comments due to the requirements of open meetings law, but may do so in the future. If anyone would like to make public comments, if you're in the meeting room, please come forward, or if you're on Zoom, please use the raise hand function. Wait a few seconds. I'm not seeing anyone rush to raise their hand or come forward. All right, so we'll close public forum number two, or public comment number two. Liaison assignments, committee meetings, updates, announcements.
Well, let's see, this afternoon we canvassed the votes from last week. And at 5 o'clock, I think there's groundbreaking for Nevada Field House. Those are today's upcoming events yet. Tomorrow morning, I'm attending a symposium on building inclusive organizations with the chamber. I think maybe all of us are. Mm-hmm. And I have a quarterly 911 service board meeting tomorrow night. Thursday's Veterans Day. I think I will be off on Friday. Wednesday. We have a drainage district meeting.
Yeah.
Monday and Wednesday next week.
I think Tuesday is the morning one.
Yeah, they have Tuesday morning one.
All right. Okay. Yeah, the other two are evening ones.
Three drainage district meetings next week, one before our next supervisor's meeting. So I think that's all I have. The miscellaneous meetings.
All of those.
then the next information meeting for the infrastructure, the new infrastructure bill, that's Wednesday afternoon at 3. And then the third one is Friday morning at 10. I can send you links to those if you don't have them. I'm also attending the symposium on building inclusive organizations tomorrow morning. And then we'll hop on to as much of the Protect Our Land meeting Wednesday night. The Climate Action Team meeting Friday afternoon. And then Monday I have the NACO Arts and Culture Commission meeting in the afternoon. Addition to that's meetings throughout.
Yep, I have same for today. I also have a park meeting tonight. Inclusive business tomorrow. I have a MICA meeting tomorrow night as well. We'll try to get on to a register for people to protect our land. Thursday, I have the Central Iowa, the workforce. We actually have a joint meeting from in the morning, so I'll be attending that. Friday, I have a AEDC meeting and a conservation meeting. And then Monday, I have the Drainage District on my calendar as well. So certainly a busy week this week and a busy week next week.
Yep.
As well.
But Chief, I would like the link for the NACO tomorrow. I won't be able to do the one on.
Sure. Yeah, if you could and send me both of those because I may be able to. I could probably do tomorrow, but I'm not sure about Friday, but I may be able to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And tomorrow there's a mission control meeting. So anyone who's working on a mission statement, there's also a meeting
tomorrow.
Right. Okay. Next is.
I will be available Friday, but
okay.
I'm just not going to be in here.
Okay. Next, needs to go into closed session pursuant to Iowa Code 21.5(1) sub A general assistance appeal.
Move one for session.
A second. Sorry.
Then moved and seconded. Mustin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Heddens? Aye. Okay, we are back in open session. Is there a motion?
I move that we affirm the general assistance appeal decision made by our community services director.
So moved and seconded. Merkin?
Aye.
Basil?
Aye.
Heddens? Aye. Is there a motion to adjourn?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
So moved and seconded. Basil?
Aye.
Merkin?
Aye.
Heddens? Aye. We are adjourned.